Hey, and welcome back to the Strategy Sessions. My name is Andy Jarvis. This is episode one of season three of the Strategy Sessions. If you've never been here before, thank you very much. There's 40-some episodes in the back catalogue. Why haven't you been listening? What have you been doing with your time? How have you been finding out about how to become a better marketer? I don't know the answers to those questions. Only you can answer those questions. And you know that you'll need to go back and listen to the whole back catalogue. If you are a regular here, well, thank you very much for coming back. We've got a brilliant episode lined up today with Lily and Gil talking about performance marketing, brand marketing in the D2C space specifically. And before we do that, I want to mention a word from our sponsors. Ooh, Andy's got a sponsor for the podcast. It's Learn Inbound, one of the best marketing conferences about. They're going to be in Dublin. I am not speaking at the event, to be absolutely clear. That's not why I'm promoting it. I am hosting it, though. But Learn Inbound are sponsoring this. It's on Thursday, the 27th of October at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. The lineup hasn't been released just yet. It's probably going to be out the same day this podcast comes out. So I can't even tell you who's speaking, right? But I've seen the preview of the lineup and I can tell you it looks fantastic. It looks mega. So have a look for the tickets. There's a link in the show notes here. Click on that. It'll take you where you need to be and then see if you want to buy a ticket. And I will see you there. Anyway, right, on to the episode. Here we go. Over to Gil and Lily. I've got Lily Hecht-Levitt and Gil David joining me on the podcast. Say hello, love folks.
Hello, folks.
There we go.
Nice to see y'all. Right.
Let's start with you, Lily. Come on, tell us where you are. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're on the podcast.
For sure. So I'm Lily. I live in Norfolk, Virginia. And I'm super excited to be here. So thank you so much for having me. I've been working in the D2C e-com space on the brand side for over 10 years now. I got my master's in marketing at Georgetown, actually focusing on sports marketing. So work with quite a few professional athletes and been really fortunate to help grow companies, being one of the first members from, for example, I was at Lisa as their sixth hire and went from selling one mattress a day to making over $100 million a year when I was took my exit there, which is awesome. And right now I'm working at Routine and handling all the brand and marketing there as well. So very excited to be here.
Brilliant. Thank you. Now, I promise you, listeners, whenever we do a sports related podcast, the numbers tend to go up. I have a sports marketing background. Gil plays a funny sport. What do you call it? Football, isn't it? But Gil plays gridiron. But we're going to talk about sport only through the lens of your product today. So if you're like, oh no, not another sports podcast, it's not just going to be about that. I know some people are like, why do you do that? Gil, tell us who you are and what are you doing on the podcast?
So I'm Gil. I'm from London originally. You can probably tell by my accent, but I live in Belfast, Northern Ireland now. And I own the agency Run DMG, which is a specialised performance marketing agency, but we mainly focus on Facebook ads. I've got my marketing background. My degree was in marketing, going back to when I graduated, 2003. Long time ago. And then after that, I was in kind of sales, business management roles for about 15 years before I went out on my own, took the plunge and set up Run DMG. And yeah, now we focus mainly on e-commerce brands globally. We've got about, I think, probably 60% of our clients are in the US. And we spend about $1.5 million a month just on Facebook ads for e-commerce clients. So yeah, that's what we do.
Brilliant stuff. So luckily you two are in different continents, so we can't just set you off fighting to work out the different, you know, is performance marketing better for D2C brands or is it brand marketing? But we'll do a kind of a verbal polite fight, right, about whether brand versus performance is a little bit better. But before we get into that, Lily, you work for a company now called Routine. Do you want to explain to people who haven't heard of you what Routine is and does and your sort of customers you sell to?
Yes, absolutely. So Routine is a multivitamin that's completely tailored to you and your precise needs based off of your biology and physiology. So we're able to do that through three different ways. First, we have a DNA test. It's a really easy at-home cheek swab. And that way we're able to see if you have any genetic mutations or if you've done ancestry.com or 23andMe, you can also upload that data to your profile. And then we also look at your blood nutrient levels. And so we're able to do that through an easy at-home finger prick, or if you've recently gone to the doctor and you took a blood test there, you can upload that data. Then there's an online qualitative assessment that really looks at your lifestyle. So how many hours of sleep do you get? Are you, what does your diet look like, exercise? And those three data points go into our algorithm and we're able to precisely dose 19 micronutrients unique to you. So in layman's terms, like how I look at it, it's a daily multivitamin and I have a genetic mutation that affects how I react to free radicals. And to combat that, I need a lot of selenium. And then I also am extremely deficient in B12 and iron. And so I need a lot of that in my specific formula. So routine is just offers both the testing and the solution to really help hit your wellness goals.
So I'm going to, for the rest of the show, hopefully pronounce vitamin in the British way rather than saying vitamin, which will have people going, what is he saying that for? But so that's not just me trying to correct you. I'm just that British, right? But perfect. Are you a vitamin company or are you a data company? Are you a bit of both? Where do you sit? Because that sort of algorithmical approach and medical company, where do you sit? How do you describe yourself?
So we're actually working on that right now to say, like, how are we thinking about it? So we are a data-driven health company, and really focus on like the health and wellness sector, but science obviously plays a major role in what we do. A lot of companies will say they're personalized or using science or data, but really it's just that online assessment versus we actually are the ones that came up with the AI. Our co-founder, Dr. Daniel Wallstorfer runs our lab over in Austria, and he has a background in nutrigenetics. And so right now we really sit at the intersection of health and technology. So I would say it's both.
Excellent. And last question then, are you US only at the minute in terms of sales? Are you worldwide? Okay. And who, you mentioned you've got athletes on the books, but who is your sort of ideal customer?
So we're in the United States for right now, and really say that we're for optimizers. So when we first launched really into people that were taking us tend to be biohackers, people that have tried supplementation before, but realized that it wasn't working for them. But now we also are doing a better job, I think, of marketing to the everyday person, weekend warriors, moms who are busy with kids, and also, you know, entrepreneurs have their own business. Professional athletes do take routine, but we're very clear that, you know, we aren't just for athletes. We are really just for the person that is looking to step up their nutrition and their lifestyle goals and was looking to be a healthier overall person.
Great stuff. Okay. Well, look, so we now know a little bit about routine. Gil, you work with D2C brands mainly these days, or is it just e-commerce rather than D2C? And what sort of services do you offer for them?
There's a fair bit of crossover between them. I'm actually just on your website now, Lily. I mean, I checked it out the other day, but for anyone listening, it's routine, routine.co. That's right.
Yes.
And it's not going to get any free samples, Gil, just by doing the promotion. You're not getting any free samples.
No, really? No. 50% off. I've had a Whoop strap for a long time, so that's obviously different, but a similar kind of thing, like self-optimization and being more aware of, you know, your own body and data that way, and trying to look at that way. Very cool website, so I'll have to check it out more. But in terms of what we do, we mainly do Facebook ads. We work with supplement companies before, but not in the this kind of health space really. So we do Facebook is our primary service. We do other close related things. So we don't do like web design or SEO, but we do Google Ads, TikTok as well for some of our clients. And then we're starting to handle email for some of them as well, just because it makes sense. You know, they all go together, kind of retention and acquisition. And it makes sense for us to kind of manage all those for clients. So that's what we do, but definitely mainly specialized in Facebook ads. Or Meta. I still can't get used to calling it Meta.
Anything that comes through with Facebook, we'll get there in the end, right? And rebrands always take a time to land, but that's for a different episode. So you're very much in the performance space, right? So how do you, when you're working with clients, Gil, are you brought in as part of like wider marketing meetings, or is it very much performance sits in this silo and everything else is happening over there and you just get on with managing ROAS or whatever it is that you focus on these days?
Right. I thought you didn't like ROAS as a metric.
I don't like ROAS as a metric, but I didn't want to sideswipe the whole conversation right now with ROAS as a metric, but we'll come back to that later. Oh, Gil's frozen.
Ah. Oh,
is he back? He's back.
Temporary freeze.
You see, this is what happens. Yeah. You start talking about Facebook and all of a sudden the call, right? It's like they're in there watching. They know we're talking it's about them. That's right. Yeah, he is. He's dialed in. Hi, Mark. So, yeah, so we'll come back to my dislike of ROAS as a metric in a minute. So, but are you sort of siloed out? Are you part of the team? Does it depend by who you're working with?
Yeah, I think that's where we're a bit different. It's probably because of my marketing background, because a lot of Facebook specialized agencies or marketers, you know, that's really all they've done. Whereas I started back how many years ago with the 4 P's, now it's like 12 P's or whatever it is now. So I think, you know, I am more aware of the basics of brand and marketing than a lot of agency owners. So yeah, generally I think we over-service some of our clients because we contribute in other ways than just running ads. You know, we don't just take the ads that the client gives us and run them. We definitely focus a lot on feedback about creative, what kind of creative we need, what's working, what isn't working, concept in terms of messaging. And then, yeah, like the whole debate about performance against brand. We do work with a couple of CPG brands and they're more focused on brand awareness maybe than performance. So we do bits of that as well. So I sort of can see both sides, and there's definitely pros and cons to each. And I think most brands need to have a balance of a percentage of their budget that is on performance and a percentage that is on branding stuff that's more longer term. Because I think one of the things, especially the iOS 14's killed, is the immediacy of Facebook ads and performance marketing. And people have gone back to thinking, you know, instead of just thinking, you know, what am I going to do? What tweaks am I going to make my ad account that's going to get my ROAS up in the next 3 days, to more, okay, what's going to get it up? Performance overall and marketing efficiency and blended ROAS and stuff like that, the better metrics to look at anyway, over the longer term and over weeks and months rather than over days and just thinking too short term. So I think that's one of the few positives to come out of, you know, the privacy changes in the last year and the changes on Facebook, is it's forced a lot of people to think more longer term and less short term. But I still see some people, they're like, oh, my ROAS is down today, what can I do about it? Or, oh, the revenue's down today, what can I do? It's like, you know, you're never really able to do that much anyway to have much of an impact unless you've only launched a 50% off sale halfway through the day. So yeah, like I say, it's one of the few good things I think about it, is it's made people think a bit more longer term and put a bit more value into brand stuff rather than just performance.
So you, with one answer, you've opened the door, several doors there, which we'll walk through at some point during the discussion. ROAS and why I think it's a terrible metric, iOS 14, time to revenue, discounting, and profitability. So this is now going to be a six-hour podcast, but that's okay. That's okay. It's all right. We've got nothing else to do this afternoon. Lily, you're sort of brand marketing, although you have been involved in performance marketing as well. What's your view on, you know, sort of agencies and partners and things working as part of the team, or do you prefer your performance marketers just to focus on their metrics and just look, hit the numbers and get on with it and leave the rest of it to us?
Yeah. So I started off my career doing performance marketing. This was, you know, Wild West back in 2014. So that's when it was like, ooh, what's an influencer and ambassador and like figuring out Facebook. And
what does UGC stand for?
What does UGC
stand
for? Right. Exactly. I still actually get that question, which is interesting. So I find that Facebook is a necessary evil, because it is one of those things where I see that if we're not spending, then our revenue is going to be going down, because there is such a parallel with spend. And this is any company I've been with for the past 10 years, spend on Facebook and then also revenue. So definitely understand that. And we actually look at CAC instead of ROAS. So we can get into that. But to answer your question, I can't tell you how many agencies I've hired and fired. No offense, Gail.
Oh, you're one of those people.
Yep. It's just, and maybe that's just like the kind of companies I've been with, but we have a very hard time finding someone that understands the immediacy, like you said, of what we need to do to hit our goals, but also just being in the startup world and having a couple people, it ebbs and flows so much, and there's a constant that we need to pivot. And so while I understand like best practices, like, oh, let's like not touch an ad for a week and see what happens, and it's in the learning phase and all that, it's like, no, this shit needs to work in 3 days. And this is how much time we have to do. And here's the creative test, here are A/B testing, here are the landing pages, like put it together and make it work. And so I completely understand that I'm also like never worked for a company that's an ideal client. So what we're doing right now actually is, as of the past week, is brought in someone from Marketer for Hire on a consultant type basis, working part-time with us. And it has more immersed himself into the company. Already see more success from a freelancer aspect versus than working with like a full-on agency. And I haven't tried Gil, so like completely this, I could be wrong. But I found that it's really hard to have someone come in and understand the strategy of the company and the branding and the copy, the narrative and the storytelling, and being able to weave that into ads that convert. So typically the most success I've seen is always just handling it in-house. Very much still am of that belief, but also understand from bandwidth issues that can only be realistic. Don't think that we know so much that we don't need, you know, an expert to come in, especially after iOS 14. Agencies leave a bad taste in my mouth, going to be completely transparent.
No. And look, it's good to hear. And I've worked agency side just over 5 years ago. I probably spent 7 years in agencies. And my view from various different sides of the fence tends to be that a lot of agencies either skip the kind of immersion stage in a brand, or brands don't like to pay for it. So it gets skipped one way or another, though. It gets skipped, which is never a good thing to do. And then I think there's a lot of companies pick the wrong agency, not as in skill set, but as in size. I'm a big believer in you've got to pick the right size agency. And sometimes smaller companies go to bigger agencies because they've heard great things and the presentation's slicker and the dinner and the things that they take you for are better. But when you're 2% of their revenue and they've got Nike on as a client, you're being looked after by the grads, or worse, by the work experience kids, right? If you go somewhere where you are a mid to top client, smaller agency, you're in a more responsive team, finding the right agency and the right profile fit and, you know, just the right company for you is a really difficult task. And I think sometimes companies spend too much time focusing on, can they do the job, as in what are their technical expertise, and not, can we actually work with these people? And I think that's probably a bit that's missed, that takes a little bit more time and it is less measurable, right? You know, do I like this person? Are they going to take a call when I need, you know, all those little bits can be missed. And then you just go through the whole pain of firing agencies and recruiting another one. And but again, it's probably a whole other podcast in that. But does that sound like your experience lately? You know, sometimes like we need to get someone in who can do it instead of focusing on, are they the right people for us?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think culture fit is really important, both from agency hire and internal hire. And you're right. Usually when we are hiring an agency, it's because it came recommended from someone else we trust in the space, but not necessarily, and they might be in the health fitness intersection or the supplementation space, but they have different people on their team. There's a different vibe. And until they're actually in it working with you, to be fair, when we look at hiring agencies, we do look at case studies and performance. I'm not looking at the person being like, can I get along with them? But that is a learning, honestly, from this summer with some internal hires that we've really looked at, is how are we going to get along? What is their working style? Do they have an ego? How do they accept feedback? Are they a strategizer, or are they actually going to like get in the ad and do it? And so there's a couple different pieces to look at, but you're right. Normally it's also, we're hiring an agency because we're in a, oh my God, we have to get this done like moment. We're not thinking, oh, an agency in a couple of months would like totally make sense. It's no, we need this now and we need someone to do it. So There's not a ton of forethought.
Gil, you look like you're getting a sore neck nodding along to that. You're like, oh yeah, you've seen that before then.
Yeah, but I do think the relationship is very important, because like we always try, I don't like the whole client agency relationship, that dynamic. I think it's a bit not confrontational, but something close to that sometimes. So we always try and be more of a partner or an extension of the in-house team, if there is one, or, you know, or the team in general. And actually, one of my kind of criteria when I'm talking to a potential new partner is, you know, can I imagine going for a beer with him? Can I have a conversation with him that isn't about work? Because, you know, we spend a fair bit of time with, you know, communicating with our clients. You know, for some of them, we're pretty much their whole driver of revenue, the Facebook ad side of things. And if that side isn't working right, then their revenue suffers. So I think just having that relationship in the first, you know, from the first stage, and, you know, being not you don't have to be best friends, but, you know, like I say, being able to imagine going out for a beer with someone, I always think, yeah, that's a sign of a partner that we can work with. and a relationship that's gonna be good long term. Because then if things do go bad, then you can have an honest communication, and you know, you're not going to be offended on either side, or and you can work it out and work on a solution rather than just, you know, focusing too much on the problems.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And with that, sadly though, is why there's been a rise in marketing podcasts. This isn't one of them, by the way, where the marketing agency interviews potential clients and just uses it as a get to know you session. You can spot them a million miles away, like you're listening to them and it's just full of the agency going, let's tell you how wonderful we are, and you're just like, oh no, this is a terrible podcast. But that's one of the reasons why they launched. But let's move on from there. I want to talk about the iOS 14 update, and Gil, you said one nice thing about it then, which was really interesting. Tell us your view on it.
The one nice thing.
The only nice thing about it. Tell us your view on it and kind of the impact you've seen. And then, Lily, I want to know what impact it's had on you, if it's had to change the way you approach things. So, Gil, give us your... you've got now your box to stand on, your soapbox. Let's go.
How many seconds have I got? It's had a huge impact on what we do and what our clients are able to do. And I think... like we spent a lot of time, and I had to spend a lot of time re-educating clients on, you know, first of all, what to expect and what to look at in terms of metrics. Because for years, the main thing they'd focus on was probably just the ROAS that we get from Facebook or the CPA from Facebook.
Do you want to, just explain what ROAS is and CPA, just in case there's people listening who aren't necessarily in ads all day, every day.
Sure. Yeah. So ROAS is return on ad spend. So, you know, how much you spend on ads versus how much is attributed back to those ads. In terms of revenue. And then CPA is cost per acquisition or cost per purchase for e-commerce. So basically all those metrics got a whole lot more unreliable after iOS, because Apple pretty much blocked or allowed its users to block. I think they say it's about 85, even up to 90% of iOS users are opted out from tracking. And it had a big impact on Facebook. Everyone knows Facebook's revenue's been down. No one really cares about Facebook, so I'm not going to talk about them too much, because, you know, like I say, people don't care if Facebook lost a few million or billion. But other things, like it affected any social ad platform. So Snapchat initially seemed to be ignoring it and thinking everything was going to be okay. And then their revenue and their figures have been down recently. They've admitted it had a lot more of an impact than they thought it would on the platform, because it's not just the numbers that you see that, you know, they're lower because of the lack of attribution, but it's the optimization, because Facebook has less data in the first place to optimize off. And what that meant is, and I don't know if Apple were fully aware of it or if they ignored it or if they were just completely ignorant to it, but all the brands that are built off, you know, they have a Shopify store and they're built off running Facebook ads, you know, they're all hit by it as well. But it wasn't just Facebook as a company, because these companies relied on Facebook ads to generate revenue. So I think it was exacerbated by the fact that we'd had 2 years of COVID and lockdowns, and people were sat home bored with money to spare because they hadn't been going anywhere. So they were kind of bumper years for e-commerce. And then you had like the complete opposite, because of iOS, people were going out spending money elsewhere again. And now, you know, the financial situation heading into a recession. So the impact's been, you know, apart from having to kind of reframe what clients look at and getting them to look at more MER, which is marketing efficiency ratio, which is overall how much you spend on marketing and your overall revenue, rather than just looking at, you know, individually by platform, because that it just doesn't make sense these days to try and micromanage each platform. And it's better for the business anyway to look at that overall, because, you know, if your overall MER is good and, you know, you want to be spending under 30% of your revenue on marketing, and that's where you're at, then it allows the business to grow. So getting them to look more at that and educating clients to look more at that or blended ROAS rather than just looking at a non-platform number. But yeah, a lot of them have been affected because Facebook hasn't been able to work as well for them. So that they've seen revenue drop, or maybe they were projecting growth this year, when probably on average most of our clients are flat or even slightly behind on last year. We've got the odd exception, but generally that's where most of them would be at.
What about from your, before I jump in and say what I think, but what from your side, Lillian, what, are you seeing any changes since the rollout of iOS 14, or is it impacted you in any way?
Absolutely. I mean, it was a shit show, right? Like, it came out, we knew it was coming. We, you know, read all the material that there was, but until you're in it, yeah, it absolutely affected it. You know, to Gil's point with us, it was the amount of data was significantly smaller. And so we already didn't have a huge pool to go from. And so what we had to do is go really, really broad. And we're still having to go broad when it comes to any kind of targeting, because we're just trying to get someone that, I mean, I have mine off. I don't want to be, you know, trapped. So, you know, and I'm like our target customer. And so I imagine that's what most people are doing. And yeah, so it has definitely affected us negatively. We're still feeling the impact of it. We are in a much better place now than where we were when it first launched, but with the constant rollouts and algorithm changes and things they don't tell you that they're doing until you're like, wait, what just happened? It's rough. And does it affect revenue? Absolutely. Like I said, like, there's a clear parallel between, paid ads and growth and the revenue that we're seeing. And so we do our best to get by. But yeah, it was unfortunate. It was that first, the quarter it launched, was that Q2, Q1? It was,
Q2.
It was unfortunate. But we're, it's, you know, as we're heading to the end of Q3, we're rebounding somewhat. But yeah, broader is better for us.
And do you think, Lily, that Apple realized that that was going to be the effect it would have on businesses rather than just Facebook, and they realized that and thought, oh, we'll do it anyway? Or
I don't think they cared.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, and I'm like a Apple user for life. I just don't think they cared. They're like, okay, well, too bad.
Yeah,
they weren't thinking about those companies like us that are just like, you know, D2C, e-com, small companies that are not brick and mortar. So.
And the other difference is that, like, Facebook used to be not a completely level playing field, but, you know, almost, and that a small brand could still win and scale quickly on the platform. Whereas now, because of the, you know, Facebook needs more data to optimize and there's gaps in the data, unfortunately, I think it's pushed a lot of small advertisers out. Mm-hmm. But most of our clients that spend kind of six figures on ads a month, they, like, it was a bit shitty for a while, but they've worked it out and they're okay now. But the ones that were spending kind of less than about definitely 15 to 20K, there's definitely, you know, a jump in, you know, the decrease in performance, and it's a lot harder trying to make ads work at that level than it used to be.
I can't imagine spending that much and seeing any kind of performance. Honestly, like, from a brand, if I put myself on my brand side, I cringe at how much we spend on Facebook for just like the performance marketing. Because the majority of our ads are not going to be brand awareness. They're very much like, we want, you know, we look at conversions. And so that's how, you know, we gauge our success. And so the fact that, and yeah, we spend more than I would like on it, but to your point.
Yeah. Also, I was going to say, yeah, because, like, for you guys, what's your average time to purchase from someone, like, the first touch point?
A week.
So that's not too, because obviously since iOS, like, for people that don't know, attribution on Facebook used to be, used to get 28 day click, one day view as a standard. But because of iOS, that got completely nuked. So now the most Facebook go back is 7 day click.
Yep.
So any brand, as well as smaller brands, being effective, any brand with a longer buying cycle, like, I don't know, mattresses or, think of something, Andy.
Well, loads of products have, like, the higher the purchase price tends to be the longer the window is from interested to purchase, generally speaking.
I was actually shocked when we found out it was a week, because, I mean, coming from the mattress side too, but because we are a subscription product, and we are, you know, a higher end one, we're at $69 a month, but that, you know, without the testing, there it tends to be that check, the gut check, to be like, is this, you know, really researched heavily and is it science? But generally speaking, what we've noticed is you'll get served an ad, you'll come to our site, you may talk to a couple friends, and then you'll come purchase, but within that, it's still within that week. But we did actually literally just have to switch some things yesterday from, you know, the 7 day window and what does that look like versus like the 1 day. So I don't know. I still don't think there's a perfect science to it. The D2C playbook is out the window. I mean, it is not the same as it was. And Facebook is part of that.
I'm interested in the sort of concept of the D2C playbook, right? Because if you type D2C playbook into Google, right, there's 200,000 pages of people publishing a playbook of this is how you do it for D2C. But you've worked in two very different D2C brands, right? So you've worked mattresses, which is a single purchase every 10 years broadly. Mm-hmm. And now you're in a monthly recurring purchase of daily vitamins, right? Other than just the fact that you're both classed as DTC, there's very little in common between those two companies, isn't there? So has the playbook ever existed? Did you come from mattresses and go, oh, we can use all of that stuff and launch here? Or are you just, this is entirely different. We don't need that.
Yeah. So it's been, I thought that some of it could still be used, but it is a different model, right? So the lifetime value at Routine is still pretty long. Our churn is pretty low. People stay with, like, 70% of users stay with us after the first month. So that's great. And, like, if you were to look at the LTV, like, from a mattress, which is around $1,000 to Routine, there is some comparables there. But yeah, besides that, I mean, podcasts used to be, this is also, if you look at the years, it's like different in the past, like, couple of years, but podcasts used to be, you know, when I would get on the beginning ones, when I was at Lisa, we were the first podcast that Barstool ever worked with, right? Like, I went to their house in Boston and networked at them. It's crazy. And so that's, I still think that they're very valid, but the halo effect is bigger. Ambassadors and influencers, that's probably the area that's changed the most. If you're holding something, you're smiling, like Kim Kardashian did that for everyone. And it just comes off as inauthentic. And so now it's okay. Well, how do we get across that? That's why the UGC, user generated content, is so important, because that authenticity is coming across. That being said, you still have people that are literally being paid to showcase your product who've never fucking used it. So, I mean, take that with a grain of salt. Now there's TikTok that, you know, are being used. And then also I'm a big proponent of refer a friend and affiliates. And I still think that is very much, you know, important and should be built into any business. But that being said, it's not as it was in the days at Lisa, where we had like one affiliate that was just like crushing it before Casper just bought them out. But yeah, so I think it is different. I came in understanding that I wasn't even really looking more at the category, but more of the changing in the time, especially, you know, after COVID too. So I kind of took what I knew and then tweaked it and just rolled with the punches, and it's constantly different. So
that's a little bit of the startup mentality as well, though, isn't it? Is that, you know, what you think, you know, and what you actually do change regularly, because you find something new out almost every week, right?
Absolutely. I mean, newsletters for me used to work really, really great, like super easy, or like a guide that's on online to use. Those haven't really worked as well for Routine, but then it goes back to, okay, well, what about the on-site experience? We realized that was more confusing. Maybe our funnel was, you know, navigating the site, it wasn't as great. We didn't have the proper landing pages. So then it's okay, well, was it the actual, you know, person that was driving the traffic, or was it? And because what I found is that we were still driving traffic, but the conversions weren't happening. So in my mind, that's like, okay, well, maybe it's the on-site experience and UX and UI. And so since Routine is a process, it's not just like you take a pill over the counter. There's a little bit of education that goes into it. And so what we've really been working on is how can we better explain to the potential customer what our process looks like, so they feel comfortable buying versus hitting the page, being intimidating and leaving.
And so you mentioned there you focus on conversions. That's the big metric for you in Routine, is conversions. What other things are you tracking along there? I take it you're measuring things through the funnel to hit the conversion, and then you must be tracking loyalty metrics as well.
Absolutely. So we look at overall traffic and users, of course, to see how that looks at. We look at how long they're going to be on a page. What is the bounce rate? And then email to me is the lowest hanging fruit. And since I'm running the email, open rate and click-through rate. Our open rate is consistently fantastic and our click-through rate isn't. And so that's my current struggle, is how do I increase that, right? And then we also are looking at where our traffic is coming from, like what is the source medium? And we also will be looking at the conversion rate as well, based off of where are they coming from. To date, our top of funnel hasn't been as primed. And that's something that we realized through Facebook. You can get a lot of leads you can get a lot of clicks, but it may not be the right traffic. And so that's one thing that we've really, really noticed. So our cost per acquisition is going to be the main metric that we look at, and the traffic, conversion rate, time on site. We also have a quiz, and the amount of quiz completes is important to us as well. Some people just like to take quizzes for the sake of it, especially millennials coming from that. Oh, I'll take like this online or like Cosmo quiz or something.
Quizzes BuzzFeed. Are like catnip to people, right? They just can't walk past the quiz, can they? Like, oh, look.
I had to. So our head engineer, he was like, Lily, do you think there's a reason that we're not seeing all of them? I was like, how many females are taking the quiz? And he's like, oh my God, like way more. It's like, and what's their average age? Because we answer questions. And I was like, that's because we were primed to just like at 15, take an online quiz and see your results. And with not even caring, there's no solution. There's no next step. I was just like, oh, this is fun. Next. And, he's like, oh, that would make sense.
Okay. So to come back to what we were talking about earlier, you didn't mention ROAS there. Is there a reason you don't look at return on advertising spend as a metric?
I guess we should say that like we do, but we also, that's not as important as CAC for us.
Okay. So Gil, you fly the flag for ROAS. Why is it a good metric? Or why was it until iOS maybe killed it?
I think it was, 100% was like the best metric. And generally I would have said CPA is a better metric to look at. But I think it was just the easiest one for people to understand. And that's what clients especially were conditioned to, they had an idea of ROAS in their mind. But sometimes it was like a bit scary because it wasn't really that based on reality. So I was like, okay, you said this is your ROAS goal, but is that profitable for you? Is that delivering you the level of overall profits that you need for the business? And sometimes when clients looked at that, they're like, no, actually it's not, or actually we don't need that ROAS. It was just kind of pulled out of the air because 4 years ago we could get a 5X. I was never the hugest fan of it, but it was just like, you know, the bluntest instrument and the easiest way for a lot of clients, you know, a couple of years ago to understand the performance of Facebook ads. And, you know, it made sense for us to sort of optimize around that. But yeah, definitely not anymore.
I think it was easy. It's easier to, sorry to cut in, but like it is easier to calculate. I mean, to be honest. And so I think that's a big one. It's like, oh, okay, well, this makes sense. We spent this much. We got these many conversions. All right, done. It's not looking at
In every case study I ever saw was, 5X, 10X, whatever it was. And that was the main thing that people provided in case studies. And then it was like a vicious cycle of, because that was all clients were seeing in case studies, they were like, okay, that's what we're going to look at as our main metric. That's what we're going to expect when we come to you to see if you're going to work with us. It was, you know, that was the main metric that was put out there. And now I think that's been replaced by, in the D2C community, by MER definitely in the last year.
Which I think is a strong move, right? Because that, to me, and you said earlier, I don't like ROAS, and I never really have. I always thought it was a pass-through metric. It was interesting to measure and useful to know, and even great as a comparison if you were using, you know, if you'd move from one agency to another or whatever. But it didn't ever include, anyone I'd ever talked to about ROAS never included the agency fees in that. It was just the advertising. I was like, yeah, but if you're going to calculate profitability, you want to know how much you've spent. And when your agency's taking a percentage of spend, or when your agency's got quite a big monthly management fee, that has to come somewhere, right? Someone's paying that bill. It's not the tooth fairy who's paying it, right? So you've got to understand what that is, because at the end of the day, you're going, oh, look, our ROAS is this, but we're not profitable. Well, so what, right? So to me, it just felt like it became the be-all and end-all of the performance industry, who annoyed me earlier as well, because they seemed to invent marketing about 15 years ago. Performance marketers turned up and went, hey, look, we've invented marketing and we've invented ROAS as well. And now look at us. And you're like, oh, lads, is there any chance you can just fuck off? So I was never a fan of
ROAS. Do you mean digital marketing, Andy?
Oh, digital. Yeah, firstly, the digital invented marketing, and then performance marketers reinvented it again. Much like CrossFit just invented exercise 20 years ago. Yeah. It was like, no one exercised ever. Right. And then CrossFit came along and exercise was invented and they saved the world. So CrossFitters and digital and performance marketers are both in the crosshairs for me. And if you're a CrossFitting performance marketer, just get out. Just turn it off now. Turn the podcast off now. Don't listen anymore. No, I'm only kidding. I love you all. So we've killed ROAS, right? That's okay. Let's talk about discounts.
And CrossFit.
Yeah, that's it. We've killed ROAS. Ticked it today. That's done. It's gone. Let's talk about discounting in D2C, right? So I'm going to start with you, Gil, because I think in the run-up to Black Friday, maybe you had a post out and it was about how smaller companies can actually crash into what's going to be a really difficult market for them in going into peak. And I think one of the things you were saying was discounting, but you didn't say you have to do it. You were discussing it as it's maybe the only way you could start to get a little bit of cut through.
I think it was everything was about CPMs.
Oh, you see, the thing is, now I'm putting words into your mouth from a post that I read about 9 months ago, so can't be exactly.
Was it my playbook?
Another playbook for DTC. It was something about being it was maybe Black Friday specific, but it was about having to use discounting to customers are just expecting discounting. So you've got, if you want to get involved, you've got to be there for it.
Yeah, because we work with a couple of brands where they're very anti-discounts and they think it damages the brand, which is a whole lot of conversation. And I don't really see it as damaging the brand doing a discount because literally everyone does it. And especially over the last year, even more luxury brands have started doing discounts and they will do Black Friday. But yeah, those kind of things. So testing different offers before Black Friday because you know, some will always work better than others. Bundling always works well, especially from a point of view of getting AOV up as well. The other thing I was looking at was CPMs. Like obviously they really spike. It's the most expensive time of the year, Black Friday. They really start peaking about a week before. So if you can be buying traffic and acquiring users to your site, even if they're not buying straight away, you know, before that week, like for all our clients, like we start doing stuff really from this month, you know, building their email list and saying to them, look, what we need to do is accept a bit lower in terms of, you know, be a bit more flexible in terms of the CPA or MER for the next couple of months because it's going to pay off around Black Friday, because what we want to be doing then is retargeting people and all these warm audiences and hot audiences that we're building up rather than trying to hit cold traffic at the most expensive time of the year and spending most of the budget on that. So sometimes people are surprised by when I tell them that for most of our clients, we flip the budgets. Like on average throughout the year, we probably spend 70% of the budget on cold audiences, top of funnel, and then obviously about 30% in retargeting. Whereas on Black Friday, that's completely flipped around and we spend more like 70% on retargeting and most of the budget goes on making sure that we're hitting all these big warm audiences that we built up with the offer at the time when they're literally going to click and buy straight away. So there's a lot of prep that goes into it. And sometimes I think smaller brands, you know, they don't think about it till it's too late and they haven't tested an offer. They don't know exactly what kind of offer is going to resonate with the audience. Is it going to be a straight discount? Is it buy one, get one free? Is it some kind of other tier discount? So testing all those before Black Friday so you see what works best. And then you know, there's some data behind the decision that you make. This is going to be our Black Friday offer. That's what we're going to run with. And you're basing your strategy around that.
But to make some sweeping generalizations, I generally think discounting is not a great thing. The more premium the brand, the less great it is. There are a couple of exceptions where you can get away with it. So Black Friday is a time where, because people are looking for it, but I think it can be quite difficult if you're a brand like Routine, because you're not ditching old stock, right? So you can sell old stock at a discount. You can push out stuff that you don't really need anymore. So what's your view on discount? Do you discount ever? Is it kind of the golden rule in a company? We don't discount. What's your view?
Great question. So I have very strong opinions on discounting and I have it looking at it from two different ways. So from Routine, we never discount our multivitamin. That is first and foremost, because that's our core product. What we do discount and what we're testing, bundles for Labor Day weekend. So I'm really glad you brought that up. That's the first time we've ever done this. It's an extra 10% off of bundles because, to Gil's point, higher value, right? It's already going to be two products plus. And so we're okay taking a discount off of that. TBD on how that performs for us. We've tried free gift with purchase to see what does that look like and are people going to be into that. But overall, what we've been doing is even on Black Friday, even on Cyber Monday, we don't discount our vitamins. And so I've been testing over the past year and a half, what can we do? At the same time, though, we're not a gifting product. And it's really because it is so personalized to you. And so what we found is beginning of the new year, new year, new you, that is where we shine. And that is when people want to invest in their health after the holidays, after, you know, like, okay, working out, going to do better. That's our Super Bowl, right? Like that's where we shine. And so we do not discount often. when we do, it is a very big deal, but, and we don't ever do vitamins. So it's not one of those things where you're waiting around to like purchase, because it is what it is. The reason is for this, and in my past experience, so when I was at Lisa, we were like, we're not going to be like any other mattress company. We're not going to discount every weekend. We're going to be really, really strategic about it. Then as we found out, it is like heroin in your veins, right? Like if you want a sale right away, you discount. We were discounting so freaking much. If we didn't discount, we weren't getting a sale. That is exactly what I didn't want to happen at Routine, right? So we would always have a promo going for the weekend, then we get extended once, and then we get extended again, and then we would do a countdown timer, and then we would do the modal, and it was like, it was great, it worked. A little boy who cried wolf. But if you followed us enough, despite what the promo was, you knew we were always going to run something, so you would just wait to buy. And having that background, even though that's exactly what we didn't want to do at the company, it was those sales would just keep coming in, and our revenue was so amazing. We didn't really care. I mean, we did care, but we didn't, because we would like go blackout and we wouldn't do it. And it would just drop so significantly. It's like, well, fuck it. Like, we're just going to do it. So then when I came to Routine, it was very much, okay, like we don't want to set that precedent from day one. We will occasionally discount, but it's never going to be anything consistent, and it's never going to be our core product. And so that's kind of how we think about it.
And it does. I mean, you do, I think you can train your customers to expect discounts, and there's brands, you know, you'll just hang on and you can hang on. So you kind of affect demand pre-discount. I mean, bundling can be interesting with certain products, and I'd be interested to come back in like 6-12 months to see how bundlings work for Labor Day, because you can get, I think they call it the bullwhip effect of, you know, you get the demand now and you get the revenue, but actually you're taking a hit on the revenue. And does it affect you later on? Does that customer come back? Because I think you might find some interesting data points.
So you're right. And one, just to put in. So what's interesting also with our bundling is, so there's one where you do a DNA test and blood test. You take a DNA test once, right? The cool thing about Routine is you want to continue taking blood tests, because you want to continue to track your nutrient levels and how your formula can be changing. And so we actually, you know, encourage people to take blood tests a couple times throughout the year, and you can track it in app to see how your routine, to see how your levels are changing. If you're, you know, female, or you have different hormones, or you start breastfeeding, or you have a kid, like that all is changing. And so by doing bundles, we actually can be like, okay, well, we could do a quarterly plan or a quarterly bundle. So it's an ongoing, I want to continue to test. So in theory, as you said, in 6 to 12 months, it's not going to affect the actual value of the customer.
And yeah, there could be a big upside as well. You said 70% stay after 1 month, right? But mm-hmm. I'd imagine with any vitamin I've ever taken, you probably need them on it for 2 to 3 months at least before they start to really feel the impact. So bundling them to get them on it for 3 months, so they like attribute all the health benefits to it and go, oh, okay, I can't be without this now, could be a great customer acquisition.
You're right. And I should be clear that like, so we do 3 months as one. You have to get 3 months.
Gotcha.
Okay. So it's $59 a month, but you buy 3 months at once. So it's after that first, you know, they stick with us, because to your point, you do need a little bit longer to make sure that it's working, and they see the success so much that they just continue to stay.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Gil, come back to you again. You were talking about how you've already started doing a stuff for peak or golden quarter or Q4 or whatever you call it, right? It's all the same thing. You've already started doing work for that. We are in the UK facing into a recession with cost of living crisis, fuel prices going through the roof. I've got a cousin, Lily, in America. He's in New York State. I told him the prices we pay for diesel, for gas, right? And he fell off his chair. He was like, how do people live when you pay that sort of price? About 4 times what you pay.
And expensive.
Oh, it's horrific. Absolutely horrific. So there's a huge crisis hitting all of Europe, but it's worse in the UK. So from your side of things, Gil, brands that sell into the UK, what are you worried about with them coming into quarter four? And you do a lot in the US, obviously. The issues are slightly different, but there's still issues over there with rising inflation. What are the US brands thinking of?
So, I mean, the US has kind of lagged behind, I think, Europe this year with buyer behavior. So we started to see a bit of a dip in conversion rates. I'm guessing a little bit, but about March, April time. more in the UK and Europe than the US. And I mean, some clients that really haven't been affected at all, which is a bit strange. Conversion rate's still fine. They run sales. We've got one that they run sales pretty much every week, and they're still successful. They've actually grown about 20% of their revenue this year so far, which is an outlier, but they've still managed to do it. And they've really been, like, so far completely unaffected. So they're kind of ploughing on, not expecting a huge amount to change. For more of the, like, the UK and EU clients, they're a bit more concerned. I mean, I guess the other thing is there's always a bit of a lull for unless you're a specific kind of brand, for most e-commerce brands in the summer, because, you know, people are away, they're doing other things. So normally June, July aren't the best months anyway. So there was always going to be a bit of a dip then. But yeah, I guess the thing that they're concerned about is, you know, are people going to spend as much as they did, you know, last Black Friday? Now it's the second year of iOS, you know, is Facebook, the stuff that Facebook's been doing in the background, is that going to improve things from that side of things when we're running the sales? And is conversion rate going to be what it used to be, or are we going to keep seeing a downtrend in that as well, with people being a bit more careful about what they spend their money on?
So it's not a horror show at the minute. It's you know, we need to refocus, but you're not thinking this is worst peak ever.
No, it hasn't been like definitely not as doom and gloom as, you know, if you watch the news and all they're talking about is interest rates and inflation and and all that stuff. But yeah, for our clients, they're starting to see an impact, but it's not been like a massive thing so far.
We've got an economist coming on. I don't know if it's the next episode or the one after. Still got to confirm a date with him to talk about all this stuff from a kind of macroeconomic policy point of view and what that means for marketers. But the official definition, I think, of a recession is 2 quarters of contraction. So not growing for 2 consecutive quarters. You'd think sometimes if you read the news or if you watch the news that it's actually no one spends anything for 2 consecutive quarters, but it's not. It's just a lack of growth for 2 consecutive quarters. So it's an interesting point that actually there are things that are still going and people still going strong. What about you, Lily, in the US? You said your key time isn't really Q4. It's more Q1 in January. Are you looking at this thinking inflation, there's a lot going on at the minute in terms of rising prices? Are we going to get hit in January when people have maybe overspent at Christmas or put too much on credit cards? What's your view? Are you panicking yet? Are you thinking, nah, this is all good?
We're not panicking yet. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. But no, I mean, honestly, we're fortunate in the fact that your health is something you're continuing to invest in. And so even during COVID, when a lot of people weren't getting sales, more people are actually focusing on their health and they want to do the best things to protect themselves and protect their immunity. So we haven't seen, the summer is not ideal just because people are traveling and like sales kind of, you know, they do dip in the summer as well as a generalization. So we are being, we're cognizant of it. We are expecting it to some degree as far as understanding that there's a chance that it's going to be lower. We are thinking about how we can potentially combat that where in a couple of different ways, whether it's for products versus, you know, we have a really robust community that we've built. Like, how can we think to keep them engaged so they want to continue to be with routine or to try it? But we haven't, you know, seen like crazy horrible numbers that it's like, okay, well, like we're screwed. So we're pretty fortunate in that sense. We're okay. We're doing all right.
So don't panic just yet. That seems to be the advice. Focus on the basics and double down and make sure you know what you're doing. But Gil?
Okay. Yeah, I think it's probably a lot to do with your market as well, because the people that are going to spend $69 a month on a health supplement, you know, that they're likely to have, you know, money, a bit of money spare. They're not going to be on the breadline. You know, the horror stories here in the UK, people choosing whether they're going to have the heating on or feed the kids and that kind of stuff. You know, they're not the markets for probably a lot of the products that we're selling. So that's why probably we haven't been too affected so far. But yeah, it's just, I think something to be aware of. But yeah, our clients aren't panicking. They're just aware that something might happen, things might change. But so far, yeah, for most of them, it hasn't had a massive impact. Maybe a bit of a decrease in conversion rates and stuff. But yeah, nothing too huge.
That's a really good point. We do have a more affluent, educated, sophisticated, and an older audience.
So. So there's a couple of things before we wrap up that I want to ask. We have a Lily. This is completely new news to you, by the way, because I didn't even tell you about this in the build up. There's a section called Top Tips where we give a top tip, and I sing the theme tune, so you'll get that lovely bit in a minute. So I'm going to ask you both for a top tip for a D2C brand. You know, just a something simple they could take away and maybe take on and improve their marketing with now. I'm going to ask you for a book recommendation right at the end. So I'm going to ask you that. But there's a couple of things I want to discuss before that. Is that you're both into these weird NFT things that, as a granddad over here, I'm like, what is an NFT? So tell us, it's a bit of a side, a bit of a diversion, but Lily, you've done something interesting in the NFT or the non-fungible tokens. Is that right?
Yeah.
You pronounced it right as well.
No, it's good. Yeah. Yes. So this was all news. So back in September, when our product design lead was mentioning NFTs and like, maybe we should look into it. We're like, all right. I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And then we do some digging. We're like, you know what? Like, what we realized is there are a lot of NFTs out there that were celebrating, some of the, you know, your vices, if you will. And there's the Lazy Lions, and obviously, you know, there's Bored Apes, and a lot of the times you get together is drinking, you're doing whatever, it's fine, you're partying, but that was the sphere. And so what we decided is we want to be the first NFT that actually talks about being something for optimizers and really focusing on peak performance and health. So what we did is we launched everything in-house within 6 weeks from start to finish, our own NFT called Apex Optimizers. And the difference with us is it was an in real life experience. And so based off of all of my connections when it comes to brands and building relationships and athletes, we were able to actually offer ongoing utilities. It's while we have the art's fine, it's good. It's not like you're not buying it for the art. You're unlocking this community that we've been able to build. And so we sold 888. And we have, and 60% of holders are actually, this is the first time I've ever held any kind of AO or any kind of NFT. Lance Armstrong, it's his first one. We work with Justin Gatlin, Steve Aoki, and Dominican Sue. We have, gosh, so many. We have the Pomp, which is like pretty cool to have him as one. And what we have is that, like, we have brands that we brought on. So 8 Sleep, for example, every quarter we'll be doing a giveaway of over $5,000 worth of gear. And we also built a community online on Discord. And so what we decided to do is bring together the people that are into precision health and people that are into NFTs. There is overlap in those audiences and optimizers. And so we brought them together to online to have really awesome conversations. Yes, NFTs are a part of it, but also it's about what are you doing biohacking? What are your fitness? What are you doing with fitness? And then we caught the eyes of a lot of pretty big time, celebs, and able to come in.
You casually chucked in a few fairly major names there. Don't worry, we didn't miss that. Yeah, I'm going to stick that bit up for the promo. Don't worry, be like, yeah,
right, yeah.
Justin Gatlin listens to the strategy sessions. I'll just a little bit of selective editing, and it'll be perfect. Right?
It's great. I mean, yeah, and it's cool too because we didn't like it was organic. Some people like, oh yeah, okay, sure. It's like no, actually, like what happened with Lance is. His partner at his VC firm ended up buying one, told Lance about it and reached out. And like, same with Sue. And it's one of those really cool things where it just like got out there that we were doing it. And I would see like the name come through. And if they would tweet and I'd be like, I'm going to message
like,
them.
Is and that, then is that I was that like, Lance Armstrong?
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, do you want to try routine? Like, let me tell you about it. So from a routine perspective, it was awesome because while we were the ones spearheading the NFT project, because it's called Apex Optimizers and we have our own site for it, routine wasn't like tied to it. And that was done on purpose. We wanted to have them live separately.
Okay. So I'm going to ask a question here. And if you need this question editing out, I am more than happy to edit this out because it's not a fair question, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway, right?
Okay.
Two of those names you mentioned have a fairly interesting past with supplements that they took that maybe enhanced their performance.
Yep.
Lance Armstrong famously, and uh-huh. Justin Gatlin has a bit of a history of that type of thing. From you've got an NFT proposition over here. Do you then look at a brand protection gap in the middle and go, ooh, right, Can we have Lance Armstrong talking about
you?
If you need this, take it out, because I don't want Lance to sue me.
Obviously, from I also handle like our press. So like, yeah, that was huge. Did I do pros and cons? Absolutely. I had a statement written up about why. And the whole point of for Lance was, yes, he messed up. He took performers enhancing drugs, but look at what he's doing now. Look at the good he did. He still brought a lot of good to understanding to cancer awareness. We looked at that as well. We kind of thought, okay, what is bad press? Like, oh, people are still going to find out about it. So I made the executive decision. It was my dagger to fall on is I'm going to do it. And let's just see what happens, because I do feel like that was when we were hitting the end. We wanted to sell out. So he tweeted, it was his most engaged tweet to date then. And people obviously have super strong feelings. They all thought that like NFTs, like no fucking testicle, like they thought they were so funny. Everyone thought they were a jokester. And
God bless
what
Twitter.
What they didn't realize is they were retweeting it, taking a picture of it and saying how stupid it was. And actually it started going nuts because more people were talking about us. And I didn't really care if they were talking about us negatively. We sold out within a day because of the press that came around it. So, and overall it was positive. So like absolutely thought about it. Could it have been detrimental to the brand potentially? But
one of the beauties of brand extension stuff like that is that the further it is from your core product. So like Ferrari aftershave, right? If you if you get Ferrari aftershave and it stinks and it's bad and it leaves your skin in a rash, right? You become a millionaire. You're not going to think, I don't want to buy a Ferrari because the aftershave was crap. The further away from the core product it is. But if you bought a Ferrari truck and it was crap, it might still be buying a Ferrari car because that's quite a close distance. So an NFT away from your product is probably far enough that you could juggle the
unless you did intense research, you would not know Routine and Apex Optimizers were together.
Well, you've just said it now. I mean, it's out there now.
Everyone's out there. Yeah. I mean, I'm okay with it. Again, like it ended up working for us and the press was there and I was happy for people to be making jokes and retweeting. And I was like, you are literally like helping the cause. So you think you're a comedian, I think you're just like helping us sell out. So.
Brilliant. So, I mean, Twitter being full of comedians, whew, who'd have thought? I mean, so Gil, tell us about your input in NFTs. You spend most of your time on holiday scrolling, looking for new NFTs, I see. are you a collector? Is that the right term?
I suppose collector/trader. But I think you touched on a lot of things there, Lily, that people don't realize about NFTs because it's still very early, that whole market. And a lot of people do think they're a scam and it's whatever. But yeah, the whole community aspect, which is people miss because it brings a community together. But I've made connections through holding certain NFTs that I would never have made before with, you know, people who are very established in Web3 and that kind of space. And I think you were quite surprised, Annie, when I said that if you minted a Bored Ape, well, just over a year ago when they were launched for, it was about $100 and something. And if you held it, you would have actually got about, I think it was $500,000 worth of value if you just held it and with the airdrops that they were given. So there is there is a real value for certain people, you know, if you're lucky, because a lot of projects will, you know, unfortunately there is still some scammy projects and that unfortunately isn't going away anytime that soon. But, you know, if you buy the right thing, something with it that's a proper project that's backed by, you know, real people and it's got some kind of utility to it. And like I say, you know, people have, you know, become rich just from holding a couple of Bored Apes, because that was the amount of money that they basically got given, not for free, but for investing $100 into it at the time. I think it's definitely very early in the space, and there is still a big element of it being gambling rather than investing. But I think it's definitely the future, and there's a lot of applications for NFTs that will become more prevalent in the rest of the ecosystem of the world. Things like, you know, using them for tickets, and one of mine basically means I'm almost like a part owner of a football club, and they do stuff like we voted for what position they were going to buy in the summer. Were they going to buy a midfielder or a defender? That's called Bag Me United. It's Crawley Town. So that kind of thing. So it's a bit of fun, but yeah, you also you do have that involvement, and there's a community there that is, you know, engaged with the club. That club's been taken to a whole new level because it was acquired by Wagme United, and they've done this NFT collection. So there's definitely a lot of real world utility and community that people don't see when they just see, you know, Bored Apes cost 100k, yeah, and then they're just for rich people, and it's for Eminem and Dr. Dre and Snoop and that. But yeah, I think it's definitely very early, and you know, I understand a lot of the skepticism about it. But I think, you know, it's the future, and in a few years' time, I think people that get into it now will be rewarded.
So there's a whole bunch of people listening in now going, I still don't know what they're talking about. And a whole bunch of people going, yes, exactly, man, I agree with you. So I'm going to pause that now, because we're miles over time. And while it is a Friday afternoon here, it's also Friday morning in the States. So you've probably got loads of meetings to go to. So just because I know it's probably most people's favorite part of the show, we're going to ask for a top tip now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to come to you first, Gil, and let Lily think of hers. But what we need is a TOPTIP. TOPTIP. Gil.
What was the one I did in the first series?
Oh, I can't remember. That was like 20, 30, 40 episodes ago.
You don't remember every episode?
No, I don't. I don't. Lily, have you got a TOPTIP?
I hope this isn't the same one.
Yeah.
Go, Lily. Go on. We'll go to you first. Gil, can think.
Okay. So it's a tip that I am working on myself, and as far as just like branding, it can be like it's a branding tip, right? Like marketing brand, or is it like a tip in just like general?
Anything will do. And as long as it's really DTCM, that'd be fine.
Okay. I think one thing that's a miss is when a brand or company is talking about their product and that's what they're leading with, instead of the storytelling and the narrative or the benefits. And so one thing that we're working on is that, because that personalization is really important. You want to know why you're buying something, not just like, we are multivitamin and you can do X, Y, and Z. It's like, yes, you can increase your focus. You can increase your endurance. You can decrease brain fog. It's like, so what we're working on. So my tip is, if you're a company, to really think about that narrative, that storytelling. And that way you're able to really bring in the branding into the actual performance marketing. And that's like that really sweet spot when you're doing ads and then you're also doing branding. And when those two worlds come together and they intersect, that's when you know you have something that's going to most likely perform.
So before we go to Gil, I'm going to spin off that and give you another TOPTIP, which is a tip I use for businesses about how you get to that, right? So I call it features, advantages, and benefits, right? Fab. And people always get this huge list of features. Our product does 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Usually end up with like 20 things when you ask a company to do it, right? And I have a really simple 3-word thing that I ask them. So they'll say, give us a feature of your product, Lily.
Oh, just one of the features?
Yeah, just one feature. Give us any feature.
Better immune health.
Better immune health. And I just say 3 words, which means that. That's all you need to do, right? And then answer that question. Better immune health, which means that you won't get sick
as much. You live longer.
Which means that you're not going to take as many days off work. And just if you can ask which means that twice, you usually go from a feature to an advantage and an advantage to a benefit. Not always the case, right? You would typically find, in my experience, if you have 20 features, you can usually find 20, 25 advantages, 3, 4, 5 benefits, right? Not everything has this real kind of emotional benefit ladder benefit, but just ask those 3 words, which means that. List all your features, which means that. List all your advantages, which means that. And you'll hit presto, you'll have some benefits. And then when you've got them, talk about them, benefits, advantages, features. That's the Simon Sinek start with why thing, right? So features, advantages, benefits, talk about it, benefits, advantages, features. There you go. Gil, after 2 top tips, right, you're in. TOPTIP.
I remember my last one was about scaling ads. So it's going to be about Facebook again, but just test more ads. Because one of the things I see from auditing accounts is people aren't testing anywhere near enough ads, and especially since iOS, like we're testing even more than we would have done before. So even in a smaller account, if you're not spending a huge amount, you should be testing at least like absolute minimum 3 new ads every single week. We test more than that, like probably more like 5 to 10 for bigger clients, just because it gives you more chance of finding a winner that you can scale and spend money on and get better performance. So yeah, test more ads, test at least 3 new ads a week.
Perfect. Brilliant. And one last question, bulk recommendations, podcast recommendations, recommendations where people can go and find out more about, obviously this one, but you know, everyone knows this is the greatest marketing podcast on the internet. So Lily, where do you go? Where do you recommend people go? What books do you recommend they read?
My favorite book, and I have two copies, one that is all highlighted in notes, and the other one is I lend people to read, is Ray Dalio Principles. And it is, some people might think it's a tome. I think that it is fantastic. It is so amazing for anyone that is an entrepreneur looking to start a business. It also talks about like your personal and professional growth. And so that is the number one book I would definitely recommend. And I always go back and review it.
I love you've got two copies of it as well. That's proper.
It's
I
so
love,
dorky.
I love that. What about you, Gil? Where do you go?
Actually, I used to read a lot and I just really got out of the habit. And it's something I always intend to get back into and I don't get around to it. But I think one of the best books I've read in the last few years was The Chimp Paradox.
Yep. Cracker.
Yeah, that one by, what's his name?
Steve
Peters. Yeah.
Steve Peters, yeah. Brilliant book about how the brain works. It's clinical psychology.
Yeah. So it's about basically in one sentence, like you have an inner chimp that's telling you to do stupid things or irrational things, and it's about recognizing that and understanding that and kind of learning to control it in one sentence. But yeah, that was a good book.
Really love that one too. Listen, thank you very much. I'm aware we've gone miles over time. Apologies if we've crashed into all the meetings. So thanks very much, Lily, and thanks, Gil, for coming along. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time for the next episode. Thank you.
Thanks.